Imagine this. You've just landed maybe a dream job managing a community theater, or perhaps you've got the keys to a classic concert hall. You walk in, full of ideas, ready to go, only to find the sound system has this weird buzz and the lights flicker randomly. Maybe the video feed looks, I don't know, ancient.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
That's kind of the reality, isn't it? Inheriting these complex situations, especially in places like performance venues. Our deep dive today is all about tackling those inherited venue issues. We've got some really great stuff from a fantastic guide. It's called How to Solve Common Inherited Venue Issues. And it lays out, well, both the cultural side and the, let's face it, often frustrating technical challenges you run into.
Exactly. And our mission here, for you listening, is really to give you a bit of a roadmap. How do you actually cut through that inherited chaos? How do you find the root of problems that have maybe built up over years without just getting completely overwhelmed?
We're going to zero in on the most common physical infrastructure issues. Because honestly, that's often where the most immediate, tangible headaches are. And we'll give you concrete solutions straight from the source material.
Now, the guide does mention this huge cultural challenge that seems to be behind so many of these inherited messes. You know, the one, the this is how we've always done it mentality.
Yeah, the Clive issue.
It's a massive hurdle, right? It can stifle any organization, stops growth, stops improvement. But for this deep dive, we're going to focus really tightly on those physical, technical problems still. Keep that cultural point in mind. We might circle back to it.
Okay, so you're faced with this inherited venue. Where does the guide say you should even start trying to sort out the mess?
Well, maybe unsurprisingly, it points right to the source, power.
Power.
Okay. It's pretty eye-opening how often the biggest issues come down to really fundamental questions about power distribution, questions maybe people just stopped asking. The guide says you need to ask right away, is power even available where you actually need it? Simple question, but crucial.
Right.
Is there enough power for everything you want to plug in? And this is a big one. Are your systems on separate electrical legs when they should be?
Separate legs, memo.
Meaning they have their own dedicated power path from the breaker panel. So they're not sharing with, say, the refrigerators or something else noisy. And for audio specifically, it's critical. All your audio components need to be on the same leg. That helps avoid ground loops.
Ah, okay, that brings us to something really interesting, especially for anyone who's dealt with venue sound, that infamous 60-cycle hum. What exactly is that noise, and why does the source pinpoint it as such a common problem in these inherited systems?
Right, that constant low buzz, brr. It's more than just annoying, isn't it? It's like a diagnostic signal. It's telling you something's fundamentally off with the electricity. The guide highlights it's almost always because different components are not pulling power from the same electrical leg of the breaker panel.
Okay.
And that mismatch, that almost always leads to a ground loop.
A ground loop. So what is that electrically?
Think of it like an unwanted extra circuit. It creates this noisy electrical feedback loop because different bits of gear are finding multiple sort of accidental paths to electrical ground. It's kind of like an electrical dog chasing its own tail and making noise while doing it.
Okay, so if you hear that hum, that buzz, how do you actually track it down and fix it?
Our guide gives some pretty clear troubleshooting steps. First, you got to play detective. Identify which specific breakers supply power to all your audio gear. That means your console, any CD players, wireless mic receivers, computers running audio, amplifiers, powered speakers, everything.
Right, trace everything back.
Exactly. Then you need to make sure all those devices are pulling power from the same side of the breaker panel, the same leg. If they're split, some on the left side, some on the right side, that's almost certainly your ground loop.
And if rewiring the whole place isn't exactly an option, which, let's be real, it often isn't.
Then the advice is to hunt around. Try to find alternative outlets nearby that are tied to the same side of the panel. Sometimes, honestly, it's as simple as plugging everything related to audio into one dedicated power strip that you know is fed from the correct leg.
Okay, makes sense. So let's say you've meticulously cleaned up your power sources. Everything's on the same leg, but you still have a hum or other noise issues. Where does the guide point next?
The next battleground is usually your cabling.
Ah, the cables.
And a key thing the guide brings up is the difference between balanced and unbalanced quarter-inch cables. Balanced cables, you can often spot them by the extra ring on the plug, the tip ring sleeve, or TRS connector. They are much, much better at rejecting noise.
Why is that?
Well, basically, that extra wire in a balanced cable allows the system to cancel out noise that gets picked up along the cable run. It's like active noise cancellation for your audio signal.
Dang.
Unbalanced cables, the simple tip sleeve ones, they just don't have that protection. They're much more susceptible to interference.
And what other cabling traps should people watch out for? I know I'm probably guilty of using way too many adapters in my own setup sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. The guide really hammers this point. Replace adapters with single, correct cables whenever you possibly can.
Right.
Every single adapter is another place the signal can degrade, get noisy, or just fail, a potential point of failure. Also, check the cables running after your mixer, the ones going to your DST, your digital signal processor.
Yeah, effects and routing brain.
Exactly. Yeah. Or directly to your amplifiers. Are those cables shielded? That's critical. And here's a huge one. Do those signal cables cross over power cables? Especially unshielded ones.
Ah, bad news.
Very bad news. They just soak up electrical interference like a sponge, creates hum, buzz, all sorts of unwanted noise. You really want to keep signal and power lines separate or crossing at right angles if they must meet. Avoid that electrical spaghetti behind the rack.
The guide really stresses that fixing these grounding and cabling issues might take some real trial and error, huh? But that clean power and good cabling are just non-negotiable. The foundation.
Absolutely. It requires patience, definitely. But get that right and everything else becomes much easier.
Okay, so once you've maybe wrestled the power and audio gremlins into submission, the next layer of inherited fun often involves the lighting system. Our guide mentions these can vary wildly. You might find a pro setup or something that looks like it was assembled from spare parts over decades.
That's putting it mildly sometimes, yeah.
So what's the ideal scenario for lighting, and what are the common challenges you inherit?
The ideal setup, the dream scenario described in the source, uses shielded DMX cabling.
DMX, that's the lighting control language.
Exactly. So shielded DMX cables routed properly to every lighting position. These are all tied back neatly to a central dimming system or maybe directly into modern intelligent fixtures. Even better, though, is when all those positions are networked. Using standard network cables back to a dedicated switch just for lighting. This allows you to use modern protocols like ARTNET or SACN.
Which basically means?
It means lighting control data travels over the network, like computer data. It gives you incredible flexibility. You can easily reroute things, add fixtures, control zones. It makes the whole system scalable and much easier to manage than old school hardwired DMX runs everywhere.
That sounds amazing for a new build. But like we said, most inherited venues aren't starting fresh. How do those older hardwired DMX setups cause problems? The source mentioned something about ports being stuck as outputs.
You're right. That's the reality most people face. In older, simpler DMX systems, if a port on a splitter or controller is set up as an output, it's always an output. You can't just plug something in and make it an input.
Yeah.
It really highlights why you absolutely need to map out the existing system. You have to create a diagram, trace the cables, understand exactly what goes where and how it's configured. Otherwise, you're just guessing. And speaking of essential details, for DMX termination.
DMX termination. What is that, and why does the guide say it's so critical?
It's just a small plug, looks like a microphone connector, with a tiny 120 ohm resistor inside. You put it on the last fixture in every chain of DMX lights.
Okay. And if you don't?
If you don't terminate the line, the DMX signal can literally hit the end of the cable and bounce back, like an echo.
Causing
chaos. Flickering lights, random strobing, fixtures doing things you didn't tell them to do. It looks like gremlins, but it's just signal reflection. Also, for longer DMX runs, the guide recommends DMX repeaters or optosplitters. They boost the signal and, crucially, isolate each chain. So if one chain has a problem, it doesn't take down the whole system.
Sure.
And here's maybe the most critical note, tying back to our earlier discussion. Lighting power must be on a different electrical leg than your audio system.
Separate legs again.
Absolutely non-negotiable. If they share power, you are practically asking for hums, pops, clicks, and all sorts of interference bleeding into your sound system every time the lights change. I've heard horror stories, seriously, of entire shows being ruined just by that one mistake.
Wow. Okay, message received. Keep audio and lighting power separate. All right, moving out of the screen. Video systems. The guide suggests these are often the most inconsistent part of inherited venues, just all over the place.
Yeah, that tracks. Video tech has changed so fast, and venues often upgrade piecemeal, if at all.
So for you listening, if you're evaluating an existing video setup, what's the first thing you should look for? The immediate red flag.
One word, VGA.
VGA, the old blue computer connector.
That's the one. If the system is still relying heavily on VGA connections, especially for longer runs, the guide basically says it's way past time for an upgrade. Like, seriously outdated.
Why is VGA so bad now?
It's an analog signal, for starters. Prone to interference, ghosting, signal degradation over distance. Just not reliable or high quality compared to modern digital standards.
Which are?
HDMI is common, though it has distance limitations too. For professional setups and longer runs, SDI, serial digital interface, is the way to go. Robust, reliable, designed for exactly this kind of work.
Okay, so ditch the VGA. What about projection systems? That common setup where you have a computer maybe in a booth plugged directly into a projector way across the room.
Yeah, that's very typical. The ideal scenario, according to the guide, is actually getting that projector on the same electrical leg as the audio system.
To avoid ground loops again.
Exactly. Prevent potential video hum bars or other interference caused by power discrepancies.
But if you just can't get them on the same leg.
Then your best bet is using good quality direct input boxes or DI boxes that have a ground lift switch. That can often interrupt a ground loop and clean up the signal. But beyond the projector itself, you need to think about how the video signal is getting distributed everywhere else.
Right, you might have multiple screens, monitors, feeds.
Precisely. The simplest, cheapest way is just a basic video splitter.
Like an HDMI splitter you buy online.
Kind of, yeah. But the problem is, it just sends the exact same signal, identically, to every output. No flexibility. If one screen needs a slightly different brightness or color correction or resolution, tough luck. It's a nightmare to manage individual displays that way.
So what's the professional solution the guide recommends?
A scalar switcher. These are devices from brands like Extron, Crestron, Kramer, Vadio. There are several good ones. These are really the gold standard for proper video distribution in a venue.
Why are they so much better?
Because they let you treat each output independently. You can scale the resolution, adjust the brightness and contrast, match frame rates, correct aspect ratios for each screen individually. It ensures your image looks correct and professional on every single display, no matter how different they are. They're kind of the unsung heroes of making video look good consistently.
Right. So much more control than just a simple splitter.
Night and day difference.
Okay, so we've covered power, audio cabling, lighting, video, quite the journey through potential inherited issues. What does all this mean for you, the listener? Whether you're actually stepping into a new space, maybe taking on a tech role, or maybe you're just curious about what goes on behind the curtain.
Well, if we pull it all together, the guide really lays out a very logical, methodical approach, doesn't it?
It's wild.
It boils down to, first, standardize your power. Get everything on the right legs. Eliminate those hums and interference at the source.
Foundational.
Absolutely. Then meticulously clean up and map out your cabling, both audio and lighting. Replace adapters. Use shielded cables where needed. Keep things tidy and separate.
Get rid of the spaghetti.
And finally, embrace the modern tools. Use network protocols for lighting flexibility. Use proper scalers and switchers for video quality and control. Don't stick with outdated tech just because it's there.
The core principle running through all of this, which the guide really emphasizes, it seems, is just being intentional.
Right, exactly. Intentionality.
Every adapter choice, every cable run, which breaker you plug something into, it all matters. It's about taking that time, maybe up front, to really understand the infrastructure you've inherited, and then being deliberate and thoughtful about how you manage it, how you improve it.
It sounds so simple when you say it like that.
I know. But I can imagine in the chaos of taking over a venue, maybe putting out fires, it's probably the first thing that gets pushed aside.
Yeah.
Right? Just patching things to make them work now.
For sure. The quick fix trap.
And this idea of being intentional, it's not just about the wires and the gear, is it? It connects back to that cultural thing we mentioned.
Ah, yeah.
Challenging the "this is how we've always done it" mindset. Sometimes documenting the mess, mapping the cables, fixing the power, that physical act can be the catalyst.
Yeah, it can be the first step in showing a better way, building momentum for broader changes in how the whole place operates,
right,
moving towards efficiency, improvement.
So maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to mull over.
Consider how this methodical principle, understanding your infrastructure, whatever it is, documenting it, improving it piece by careful piece, how that doesn't just apply to fixing a noisy theater sound system. Think about any complex system you might inherit or manage. Could be at work, could be a project, could even be something in your personal life. It's really about setting yourself up for long-term success, isn't it? One intentional, well-documented, well-thought-out step at a time.